This episode is brought to you by Sabra Spreads, taking your sandwich to the next level. Learn more at Sabra.com.
I'm Mike Lameco from Food Talk. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkill, here today with Roman Cho, who I believe I was introduced to through our executive director, Aaron Fairbanks.
Okay.
Because you were taking portraits out at the Good Food Awards.
Yes, I was.
Yeah. And yeah. She goes, Michael, you have to meet this photographer. Not only does he make amazing portraits, but the portraits of who you're photographing are amazing people. And we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
But you yourself are an LA-based commercial photographer. And let's talk about what commercial photography is, because a lot of people think it's, you know, all this glam of celebrities and maybe even cars and advertisements. What is photography to you?
Well, that's a big portion. Commercial photography encompasses anything that is used in ads, right? So if you want to sell soap and you need to photograph a soap or a woman, a housewife holding a soap, then that's commercial photography.
Yeah.
So I do some of that. Another portion of my work is editorial photography, which is photos for magazines. So whenever you have an article of, say, a tennis player, Rafael Nadal, then somebody needs to photograph Rafael. So people like me are called to photograph. Yeah.
So you're not just name dropping saying, I wish I was going to photograph him. You have photographed Rafael Nadal.
I have not photographed Rafael Nadal.
Oh, you were putting it out there like a...
Oh, right. Yeah. No, I'm blanking on... I did photograph Novak Djokovic.
Yeah.
He was a cool guy.
Yeah.
Rafael, I have not. It'd be great to photograph him one of these days.
You know, but so there's commercial and editorial, but within both those, there's portraiture.
Yes.
And we can talk about Avedon in a second, but, you know, what does portraiture... How do you approach portraiture?
How do I approach portraiture? So the reason why we're talking about portraiture is because I specialize in portrait photography. I don't really do anything else. How do I approach it? I approach it in terms of, first, there's the surface level of portraiture, just simply what the person looks like. Then there is the personality of the subject, and do I try to convey the personality? I feel like some photographers focus more on the surface and the style, and they impose the photographer imposes his or her personality over the subject. And other photographers, I feel, try to bring out the mood of the personality of the subject in the photos. And I think the great ones try to accomplish both. My approach. I try to convey the personality of the subject more, and that's my focus. And sometimes, obviously, with a lot of work, sometimes you're successful, sometimes you're not.
Yeah. I mean, so let's talk about Richard Avedon because,
okay.
I mean, it was one body of work, The Family, where he did 69 portraits of corporate and media elite,
yeah,
who he thought constituted, the power structure of.
Of the government. Yeah. So what happened was that in 1976, Rolling Stones asked him to do a photo essay on the election that year. And he thought about it. He's like, yeah, I'm not really interested. Then the more he thought about it, he goes, what I am interested is, instead of covering the major candidates, is covering the people behind the scenes, people who are more the real gear, the real clockwork of the government and the people who hold the power that the public do not kind of realize. So he went out and photographed 69 people. I think it's actually more than that because there were some group photos, but 69 photos of people in government, out of government, public service, policymakers, activists who really held the power. And so you saw these people that you don't really think of when you think of people in charge. I mean, it's and really captured a wide breadth of people who are active in the government and in the works of the government. And so what I'm doing with my, and the reason I'm here is to talk about the project that I'm working on of people in the food world. And so I kind of, part of my project is based on that to show the people who are doing interesting and important work in the food world, but not to just show the popular ones. And of course I'm going to show the famous people because they are famous for a reason because they're doing important work, but also to show people who are not so public, not so popular, yeah, but who are just as important.
You know, it's funny because going back to Avedon and that work, the family, there were public people like George Bush, who at the time was, what, the head of the CIA.
Exactly.
And then funny enough, Mark Felt, who maybe kind of was a public figure, but even more so once he was out of his deep throat.
Exactly.
So it's a really fascinating dichotomy of people in that. And then in yours as well. And the reason we talked about approach initially is imposing a style. You know, it's so hard not to do as a creative person sometimes, but to let everyone, you know, be individual and be themselves, especially those that aren't necessarily overtly expressive.
Right.
And you're dealing with this cast of characters in Culinaria that, you know, sometimes prefer to be behind the scenes.
So yeah.
Let's talk about the first portrait that you took within that group.
Ooh, I think the first portrait, I don't quite remember the very first portrait for the project, but one of the first was Raj Patel, activist, economist. And he, at the time that I photographed him, he was teaching at UC Berkeley. I believe he's in UC Texas in Austin at the moment. I'm not exactly sure. Don't hold me on it. But he... when I met him, very wonderful, friendly guy, and very charismatic. And when I was photographing him, we would, as I typically do with everybody that I photograph, I try to hold conversations to get a sense of who the person is, and also to kind of try to convey that in the photograph. And he is definitely a passionate dude, very fervent in his beliefs. Without being dogmatic, so I guess the better word is passionate and not dogmatic. But when you see him speak, his eyes get really big, and he's just very into the subject matter he's speaking, and he's almost like fire and brimstone preacher kind of fervency, but really passionate, and it was really cool to see that. But then we get off that, and we talk about this stuff, and he's really wonderful sweet guy. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, how do you translate that fervent nature? I mean, do you try to get them to furrow their brow, or do you try to get them to be impassioned, you know, in front of your lens?
You know, I try to stay away from the obvious things like, can you look intense or can you furrow your brow or do that? What I try to do is, if I think when it's a good photo, it's when it happens through me guiding the person indirectly and they get to that place. And the reason why I emphasize indirectly is because it's more honest that way. Because if I tell him, look intense, unless you're an actor, majority of the people, they'll try to put on the intense look, quote unquote, and it'll look fake. So what I try to do is, give them directions in a roundabout way to get them to that place where they'll look intense,
yeah,
and very passionate about their beliefs.
You know, it's funny when you're saying give directions. I keep on coming back to this image of Elliot Sandor Katz, where it kind of looks like you're lost in this pastoral setting, and he's trying to give you directions to get out of there. You know, pushing leaves aside,
yeah.
But it's so emblematic of him and his work.
Right, right. Yeah,
because he has been this kind of shepherd of a fermentation movement that was almost lost in this country.
Yeah, yeah, and he rescued it, really spread the knowledge and propagated the knowledge. He's kind of like the Johnny Appleseed of fermentation, right?
Oh, absolutely,
yeah. But you know, that's a great way of thinking about it. I never saw that photograph as him leading us out of the woods.
Yeah,
but I could see that the way you describe it. That's really cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's cooler that you took that photo without, you know, subconsciously.
Subconsciously. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And, but, you know, hearing you talk about these people in this passionate way, too, how have they affected your life from a food standpoint?
Ooh, well, they've, since starting the project, I've definitely eating better.
Yeah.
I've always had a pretty good diet in terms of, like, I don't eat fast food. I don't like junk sugar food and all that. But starting from that point, once I started this project of photographing people in the food world, I mean, the quality of the food just got better just being around them. So that has changed. My understanding of the food system has increased exponentially. But that's what I was trying to go for, to have a better understanding of the food system. Not for me personally, per se. Not to benefit me on a personal level, but to understand the increase because simply this was a subject matter that I was working in. So I needed a better understanding to just know what the issues were so I could have a better understanding of who were important in the scene.
I mean, being in L.A., it's in your backyard, too.
Yeah, yeah, in a certain sense. The weather is fantastic, and so there's that. So we get great food because of the great weather. Being in LA near Central Valley, the majority of the food that's being consumed by the country is produced from there. Yeah, so there's that. I feel like maybe it's me getting deeper into the food world. Maybe it existed before, or maybe it is true, but I feel like the quality of the food scene, the American, the new American cuisine food scene in LA has gotten better in the last several years than before. So that was nice.
Yeah, yeah. Where in LA do you go out to eat? I mean, or do you go to farmers markets, or are you mainly cooking at home?
I don't cook. Well, that's not true. I do cook at home. That's just a survival food. I am not a cook.
Yeah.
So let's just put it out there. I love going out to a lot of ethnic restaurants. That's my thing in LA. And we're blessed to have a really great ethnic food scene because there's a lot of pockets of immigrants, of a community. And a lot of the immigrant community are the largest of that community in the U.S., so we get a lot of great food it's hard to get at other communities around the country.
Yeah.
So we're very lucky about that. So my thing lately has been Chinese noodles because me and noodles and pasta, you know, we go together well.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and again, you have these wonderful enclaves in LA, mm-hmm. but you're visiting people like Will Allen.
Yeah.
Who have created a community around him that didn't exist before.
Right. And that's the thing about the people that are being photographed for this project, Culinaria, is in that a lot of them are creating their own world, creating their own scene. Will Allen, he's doing that with his urban farming initiatives. I feel like Tanya Holland up in Oakland, who started the Brown Sugar Kitchen. She opened up a soul food restaurant in an industrial part of Oakland. And by doing that, she is drawing people into that community that previously were not going to the community because of the draw of her restaurant and helping revitalize that area. I think a lot of people who... And that's the beauty about these doers and these food people is by their work, they're drawing people in, and they're creating a network, and they're creating a community. Robert Egger, I mean, you know, we were talking about him just a moment ago with your previous guest. You know, he's doing this thing called DC Central Kitchen, and he recently went over to create LA Central Kitchen, where he's using food. He's collecting like potentially wasted food, and he's training people who are otherwise on the periphery of our society, people who age out of foster homes, the homeless, the people who are released from prison, who have no... And he trains them in food service experience. He trains them in that so they could get a job afterwards, creating a community that way, right? And if you think about it, any restaurant is a community. People think about all the times you get, hey, let's go meet at, say, here at Roberta's. And you and you're in your group of friends have your regular hangout at Roberta's. And so that's the great thing about restaurants, first of all, and that it creates communities. But second of all, the food in general, like whenever you hang out, whenever you eat, well, let's say whenever you're hanging out, usually eating is involved, right? And whenever you think about all the great times in the past that you've had in your memory bank, good majority of them involve food. So that's the wonderful part about food, and that's the wonderful part about what these people are doing.
Excellent. We're going to take a quick break and actually come back and talk about an amazing hangout that you got to bear witness to and photograph.
Okay.
That is of Alice Waters, Ruth Reichel, and Nell Newman. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
You're probably a sandwich lover. Half the people in America eat one every day. Sabra, maker of America's favorite hummus, just released a new squeezable spread to take your sandwiches from good to great. Garlic herb on turkey, sea salt and cracked pepper on roast beef, and we've got to try the honey mustard on grilled chicken. The easy squeeze bottles are convenient and you're not even stuck watching a knife. The best thing is that they have 75% less fat than the current leading spread, mayo. So whether you're looking to amp up today's lunch, eat a little healthier, or just not be a member of the Mayo Club, Sabra has your solution with their new spreads. They're vegan, kosher, gluten-free, and non-GMO. Look for them in the deli of your local grocer and learn more at sabra.com.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene. I'm Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Roman Cho, talking about Culinaria, which is a portrait series of some of the most influential people that you don't necessarily always see. And one such instance, even though they are very vocal and well-known people, are Alice Waters of Chez Panisse in Berkeley, mm-hmm. Ruth Reichel, who was a longtime editor at Gourmet,
yep.
And then Nell Newman, who is the daughter of Paul Newman, but one of the smartest and most sustainably thinking, farming practice people in the country.
Yes.
If not world.
Yep. And she's the one who started the Newman's own organics division.
And you got to see all three of them at once because they all kind of grew up together.
Yeah. They were, they're good friends. Alice and Ruth, they had their friendship starting in the 70s back in Berkeley when Berkeley was still, crunchy.
Yeah.
So to speak. And they were they were there during the beginning and created the beginning of the food scene. I'm not exactly sure how far back Nell goes back with Ruth and Alice, but they're also good friends as well.
Yeah. Yeah. But why all three at the same time?
So I had photographed all three of those ladies individually prior. But in the beginning of this project, I, for some reason, had this vision, this image in my mind of Alice and Ruth together. And later on when I photographed, when I began to know more about Nell and knew that she was good friends with the other two, so it made sense for them, her to be in the photo, but just these old friends together, and not just any old friends, but these friends who did so much for the food scene, right, and popularizing and improving the food scene and having and bettering our understanding of it. So for some reason, this vision always stayed in my mind. And being who they are, they're three incredibly busy people. The odds of them in a single room together at one time is very small, right? Unless it's for a phenomenally extraordinary event. So I thought it was going to be a pipe dream. Then they, then there was a Good Food Awards being hosted last January. Good Food Awards is an award series that was that's produced by Sarah Wiener, a wonderful woman, and her Ceiling Projects organization. And the Good Food Awards celebrates good food, small independent producers in various categories like charcuterie and cheese and wine and et cetera. And that particular year, all three of them were going to be there for the award ceremony. And the award ceremony takes place, of course, in San Francisco. And Sarah, for some reason, she's very nice and wonderful to me. And she's always reached out to me and said, hey, you know, if you want to come to this award, we'd welcome you. We'd love to have you here. And that particular year, I had the award ceremony. Awards was going to be on Thursday night. I had a shoot scheduled, a long scheduled shoot on Friday. Of course, me back in L.A. Mm-hmm. So I email, regrettably, I cannot attend. I'm sorry. I wish I could be there. And she's like, oh, that's too bad because, you know, Alice is going to be there. Ruth is going to be there. Nell's going to be there. And I went, no. Yeah. What? So I thought, huh. Okay. Let's make it work. This is an idea I have. I want to set up like a photo booth area away from in a separate room. And I want to photograph all the presenters. And she's like, okay, fantastic, wonderful. So because of all the gear that I have to use for the photo shoot, I always drive up to San Francisco instead of flying up because this project is self-funded, right? So what I did was I drove up Wednesday, spent the night, had a photo shoot Thursday morning. Then Thursday afternoon is when this ceremony organization got started. So we went into the room, we set up the backdrop, and photographed the three of them together. And then the ceremony started at 6 o'clock, which is when I started the drive down to L.A. Got home about 2 in the morning, got up at 5, and went to the shoot the next day.
Yeah.
So it was a crazy shoot, but... But again, going back to this idea of the three of them together in the room, the old friends who did so much to contribute to the food world is the reason why I wanted to do this shoot.
Oh, I mean, yeah. Given that you had to pull a double or a triple, you know, that many days up,
yeah,
to capture this one moment that pretty much encapsulates the culinary zeitgeist of this moment.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Totally worth it.
I know, right?
Absolutely.
I have no regrets whatsoever.
No, you see that thing, like, and you got to see that instant.
Yeah.
I'm very appreciative you did that. Another San Francisco you have in your series is Harold McGee, mm-hmm. who he's a very interesting one because whereas, yes, Alice had her restaurant, Ruth had her magazine, and Nell had her product line, Harold had his mind. And kind of contextualize what food was rather than proliferated its deliciousness.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So how do you photograph a thinker like that?
That's a very good question. You know, with him, again, the project is, first of all, the reason why I chose him is, again, going back to the project of Culinaria, it's about people who do important work in the food world, who change the way we understand food or way we understand it or interact with it, right? And like you said, he definitely has done a great part in changing the way we understand food, better understanding it, right? And through analyzing it from the perspective of science. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to photograph Harold. He's a scientist. He really explains how food works. How do I photograph that? So I started thinking, well, one of the most obvious thing, a lot of the process of food, of cooking food, involves heat and fire. So what if I had him holding a fire and like a torch or something and burn a food item? And the image I had was maybe like a breadstick and having the end being all charcoal, right? So when I met him, I explained my concept, you know, fire, it burns, it changes the surface characteristic from one appearance to another, and it changes the structure of the food as well. And Harold, you know, very, very wonderful and nice, but not very emotive. So he's standing there well, at least at the time that I saw him, a very analytical kind of persona, right? And he listens. He goes, okay. So I'm thinking. So I present the idea, and we go over to Whole Foods together in his car. We drive over. We grab a bunch of items to potentially burn. So I grab a bunch of breadsticks. We get some carrots with, you know, the green parts still hanging, just like, you know, Bugs Bunny cartoons. Mm-hmm. So we grab some of those. We grab a couple of other items. We come back and we set up. He's like, he's very amenable to the idea. So we set up. He has a couple of handheld torches. And we start burning things, and, you know, they look okay. They weren't particularly wonderful, but of course I'm not telling him that. I'm like, okay, great, wonderful. Yeah, that's good. You have any other ideas? He goes, well, you know, one of my favorite process is when you burn sugar, and sugar turns from solid white to caramel texture to liquid. To black. So it goes from solid white to light brown to dark brown to black. And every step of the way, it changes, the scent changes every step of the way. So he's talking about that. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. That's wonderful. Well, do you have any sugar cubes? He goes, let me go down to my basement and see what I have. So he goes down to the basement, comes back up with like 4 or 5 different varieties of sugar cubes. Now, for me, like, not being a chef, I had no idea there were like 4 or 5 different varieties of sugar cubes. But of course, he had them. So we set up the photo with like a, you know, pyramid of sugar cubes, and he starts burning them, and it starts caramelizing, and there's rivulets of caramel, and it's just wonderful. He was like a little kid in a, you know, science experiment, just having fun and involved. So that's how the image came about.
Yeah. And it shows that wonderment that Harold has.
Yeah.
Because as you said, and I think it's the perfect word, analytical as he is, mm-hmm. And, you know, contemplative and methodical, he has so much fun thinking about these things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And he's very, very much so. He was very excited. Well, you know, I was like, so apparently he was very into this whole process and just loved the thing. And I felt like that's one of the photos that I did photograph for the project that really encapsulates the person through photography.
Yeah.
With who he is and what he does. And the photo ends, and majority of the people, well, not a majority, all of them, all of these people that I photographed, because of who they are and what they do, they're very busy people. So one of my biggest concern is overstaying my welcome, right? So at the end of the photo, and again, he's very kind of an analytical kind of a personality. So he's not very emotive. So throughout the whole process, you know, I made him go out, drive to Whole Foods and pick up supply, you know, go grocery shopping with me. We were setting all the backdrop up. We were moving tables. We were setting up this area for him to burn his sugar cubes. So at the end of the shoot, I was like, you know, I thank you so much for all the time that you devoted to the photo shoot today. I hope I didn't, you know, take up too much. He goes, you know, no, I had a lot of fun doing this photo shoot. Yeah. I was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, he's a wonderful and inspiring man.
Yeah.
But it's a couple other names that I want to drop and, you know, not necessarily talk about, because I want people, if they don't know who they are, to see their image first.
Right.
Like Evan Kleiman, who, I mean, is one of the big reasons I kind of do radio. Tia Harrison and Marissa Guyana, Caleb Zigas, Samin Nosrat, I mean, Amy Rowett.
Mm-hmm.
You may have heard these names, but, you know, go to Roman Cho's site, see Culinaria, see these people, but learn about what these people are really about, because, like you said, they are changing the way our culture exists through gastronomy.
Yeah. And, you know, you touched on a very important part of why I'm doing this project, because when I started working on this project of photographing important people in the food world, what got me started was I noticing important things happening in with food and the food scene, right? And more people paying attention to it as a form of entertainment, and also as for like political issues and reasons, and for health reasons. So it's starting to get to a point where like housewives and soccer moms and dads are starting to talk about organic and locally sourced and where's the food coming from and no GMOs, right? This is when I was starting the project about 6 years ago. So everyday folks were starting to talk about this thing. So I thought, okay, something interesting is happening with food and with our country, and I want to dive in to explore that. And I think a lot of people, when they think about devoting a subject, you know, say think about devoting a subject to the food, their reaction is photograph the food. And I'm like, no, I don't want to photograph food. I'm not a food photographer. But B, I want to photograph the people behind it, people who are responsible for doing the work. And the reason why that interests me is because I'm a portrait photographer. But also, part of the whole reason why I'm a portrait photographer is to put a spotlight on these people who are doing the work, right? And especially for the food world, it's important, I think, to put the spotlight on the people in the food world, because what they do is not in front of an audience. So they're not like a musician whose job is being in front of an audience. So if you're a fan of a musician, you know what that person looks like, right? But if you are a fan of Evan Kleinman, or a famous chef, or a food writer, you don't necessarily know what that person looks like. I've kind of been surprised by how many people have seen the portraits of Michael Pollan, and they go, "Oh, so that's what Michael looks like, right?" So that's been interesting to notice. It's always fun to see who gets noticed and who don't get noticed, right? So it was important for me to do these portraits to bring these people out into the public view, who do their work behind the scenes. Another thing that I noticed is that the project doesn't encompass just chefs, but encompasses all the people in the food world, not just chefs, but farmers, the producers, the butchers, the cheesemakers, the activists, the writers, the policymakers. I'm trying to encompass anybody who touches food in one sort of way or another. And one thing that I found is that people in one area, say people who are chefs, may not necessarily know people in the policy world, say, or writers or activists like Raj Patel. Whereas when I photographed Marion Nestle and she was looking at the portrait, she's like, "Ah, Raj." Right?
Yeah.
But she didn't necessarily know other people in the different, say, like a farmer or a cheesemonger, right? Or cheese producer. So what I found was that the scene was kind of, there were segments of it. There were subcultures within the category of food. So what I'm hoping to do with this project is introduce one group to another. So that the audience can see the larger picture of what a food world looks like.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I want to be invited to that culinary mixer when you actually have it.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. When we have it, you're first on the list.
Excellent. Because who knows when, you know, Alice, Nell, and Ruth will be in the same place at the same time.
I know, right? Now, if I could get them to be in the mixer for that one, that would be fantastic.
Yeah. But what's so amazing, 6 years. I want to see this project go on forever, but I really do want to see it in another 6 years and see how that dynamic between those, you know, subcategories, as you said, change.
Yeah.
Because everyone does influence each other, and it's a bigger world than just, you know, the chefs and the farmers. And
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One thing that, like you said, the mixing of the different worlds, like Chad Robertson told me about, I'm just having a brain fart, of the Rachel Dutton, a scientist who was at Harvard, and now she's over at UC San Diego, I believe, who's mapping the surface of cheese in terms of the bacteria. So, you know, him being involved in the process of fermentation with his bread, so he has interest in science and interest in the scientific aspect of how things work. So he's apparently been in conversation with Rachel, at least very knowledgeable about what she does. So it's cool to see like that, the science and cooking, the people in those two worlds come together and work together. And I know Rachel Dutton has worked with David Chang.
Yeah.
And consulted with him about, he's consulted with her about, different things.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating.
Well, I mean, I always think of it like a baker or anyone that presents food, you know, not that it's a superficial thing, but it's something you certainly eat with your eyes. Mm-hmm. And then working with a scientist on a microbial level,
right,
something you can't see with your eyes.
Exactly.
So it's bringing light to, again, those conversations. But everyone should go to your website, RomanShow.com. And check out Culinaria, and I'm hoping you consistently add to this amazing collection of amazing people.
Well, I hope so, too. Yeah. I hope so, too.
Excellent. Thanks again, Roman. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael and Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.